This podcast is brought to you by Soapbox. Start your own podcast today at www.soapbox.host.
Tonight, we introduce a new guest host for the show as Aaron takes us on a captivating journey through the shadowy corridors of the Union Hotel in Flemington, New Jersey. It's Wednesday at 9 p.m.
So, this Wednesday at 9 p.m., we have a special guest with us, Ryan Schnurr. Ryan, if you'd like to say a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Known these guys for quite a bit. We've been roommates in college. That's all you really got to know about me.
So, Ryan, you have no idea what we're talking about on this podcast, do you?
That's correct.
All right. So, for just a brief bit of context, you know that the three of us are into supernatural and paranormal stuff.
Yep, 100%.
So basically, we've been looking at local stories or places that are close to where we grew up, where we're living now, and we look at some stories about ghosts mostly, but various paranormal events, and we talk about it. So tonight, I'm going to be hosting, and so Nick and Frank have not heard what I'm talking about, so they have no knowledge of what I'm talking about, and you have even less knowledge coming into this, not even knowing what it is that we're doing. So, sound
cool.
Good?
Sounds like fun. Sounds like a lot of fun.
All right, so then I'll dive right in. So this story that I'm going to bring you guys takes place in Flemington, New Jersey, which is where I had previously worked. So it's very close to my hometown in Milford, New Jersey.
Where's that? For the folks at home who don't know.
For the folks at home... thank you. It's nearby the Delaware River in a county called Hunterdon County. And for some reference, there's not much to do in Hunterdon County, and it's there's very little going on in the county. So, but I am going to talk about a time in the 1930s when Main Street of Flemington was more than just a quiet street in the middle of nowhere, New Jersey.
Exciting. Okay.
So,
is this Great Depression time?
This is post Great Depression time, I believe.
Okay.
Right? Because that was the late 20s, early 30s.
Early 30s.
So maybe okay. it was like during or at the end of the Depression, but that wasn't necessarily super relevant to the story, but,
got it.
Today we'll be talking about the Union Hotel, which is located, like I had mentioned, on Main Street of Flemington, in what is now known as the Flemington Historic District. So, the building was first constructed by Neil Hart in 1814 as a gathering place for stagecoaches, tourists, and public figures at the time. And then later in 1878, which was during the Victorian era, the external facade was built, which features red bricks, a French-styled mansard roof, and a wide two-story tall porch. And in 1878, it then became known as the Union Hotel. So I'm going to kind of jump forward in time. I'm going to skip over the interesting part of history, and I'm going to talk about like what happened as of recent. Well, I want to build up and get rid of like the boring stuff at the beginning so we can get into the nice juicy details as soon as possible.
Got to eat the vegetables first.
Yep, exactly. Save the best for last. Yeah.
I should do that. I kind of just do all the boring stuff at the start and the middle and the end.
True.
It's all good
the good
strategy,
stuff's
Aaron.
After the cut.
Yeah.
Oh, the editing.
Yeah, cut all the good stuff.
So, after a few decades, probably in the 1950s, I'd say, the property was purchased by new owners and it was renovated and the building was restored and transformed from the Union Hotel into the Union Hotel restaurant. So basically they used the first floor as an actual restaurant, and the second and third floors were once used by the hotel are now empty and unoccupied. So keep an eye out for that later on in the story, because the two floors being unoccupied comes up and might explain some things. And then in very recent history, We have the owner sold the liquor license in 2008, and then some months later, it was announced the restaurant would close, basically because it was hemorrhaging money since 1999.
Oh
my God.
When we were born, coincidence?
Exactly.
Oh, wait, no, you too, or 1999, right?
Yeah, the band.
Me and Ryan are 2000s fault. Boys.
Yep.
Oh, new millennia.
Exactly.
So, then a few years later, there was plans to renovate the building, restoring it to its former prominence. And then they swapped ideas and they're like, okay, we're going to demolish it and replace it with a new building. And then the community was like, no, that's dumb. We like this place. It's in the historic district for a reason. So then they flipped back to the other side. I was actually talking with my grandparents before this, and supposedly they tore down quite a bit so that only the facade was left standing, but it seems like they're renovating it instead of just taking it down completely.
Right now, you mean? Like, it's being renovated?
Yeah. Yes. So.
Got it.
Very interesting stuff, but, you know, it's a building, it goes through renovations, but there was a point in time when it was actually interesting. So, we're gonna flash back to the 1930s. So, in 1932, there was a young child by the name of Charles Augustus Lindbergh Jr.
That's a mouthful.
No way.
He was a Lindbergh baby?
No way are you telling this story.
Yes, I am.
Oh, wait, okay.
Wait.
I know this story.
The Lindbergh baby?
Not all the juicy details. Yeah. Oh, this is a great story. Okay. Yeah.
I'm gonna skip out on some of the details because it does get gory and it's a bit long. And probably a whole episode could be dedicated to
it. Years before I've heard. Okay, yeah.
But okay. Basically, in March of 1932, in the nursery of the Lindbergh home in Hopewell, New Jersey, which is about 15 miles away from Flemington, and we'll include the location in the show notes. Charles Lindbergh Jr. was kidnapped. And I'm sure you guys have heard about the Lindbergh baby and the whole to-do, but for those at home who might not know, I'll give a brief recap of what has gone on. So, Charles Lindbergh Sr. was a world-famous aviator who made the first nonstop flight from New York City to Paris. So, very important guy at the time, like the first to do something amazing. And then, so the child was kidnapped, and then about an hour after the child was kidnapped, parents discovered their child was missing, and there was a ransom note demanding $50,000. So that's a lot of money back then. I don't know how much money, I didn't do the math, but that's a lot of money.
Triple, right?
Yeah, for context, a Coke was only 5 cents.
Probably.
Did you honestly look that up, or did you just... make it up right
there. I made that up. That's probably true, right? Something like that.
Something, inflation calculator. We can figure it out.
Yeah. Plus, this was, I guess, the Great Depression does play in because this was a rough economic time for some.
Yeah, everyone
probably
was
not Charles
sad.
Lindbergh, but, you know, for a lot of people, it was a rough time. So, in the scene of the crime, there was plenty of evidence, like muddy footprints, broken ladders, etc. Obviously a handwritten ransom note. But oddly enough, none of these things could identify the culprit. So, like, they couldn't, for whatever reason, measure the muddy footprints or find any blood or DNA on the broken ladders. So, very interesting that they couldn't find anything. And then over time, the ransom notes increased, demanding more money, leading to clues and making the search for the child more difficult. And at one point, the sleeping suit of the baby was delivered as part of the ransom note, just to say, like, hey, we're not kidding, we have the baby. Like,
that's terrible.
You know, yeah. It gets worse, but yeah, that's pretty terrible, but, you know. Eventually, after many ransom notes, and I think the ransom got up to about 100,000, but they negotiated back down to 50,000. There was a middleman. I don't remember his name. It was some doctor, but pretty much there was a lot of negotiation, and eventually they paid the ransom. and the last ransom note told them to go to Martha's Vineyard. And alas, in the boat where the ransom note had described, the baby was not found. So,
not found.
No. And this was probably around... What?
But they paid the money?
Yes. So it was a false clue.
So there's a 404 error with the baby.
Yeah, the baby was not found.
I get it. I understand now.
So that was in about April at this time. And then in May of 1932, accidentally, a couple of truckers found the body of the baby partially buried and badly decomposed about 4.5 miles southeast of the Lindbergh home, right next to a highway in, I believe it was Mount Rose. So yeah, not only was the baby not in Martha's Vineyard, but the baby was not, like, alive. And even worse, after the coroner's examination of the body, the baby had been dead for about 2 months, caused by a blow to the head. And obviously there's more details, and I won't get into it because there's no need, but let's just say the baby was not in great condition, and it seemed quite clear that, you know, 2 months being dead in May puts you around March being killed. So probably wasn't long after kidnapping that this child, unfortunately, was murdered.
So the ransom notes were disingenuous. They were fake. Disingenuous the whole time. There was never a chance that they were going to get the baby back.
No, probably not. So this sparked a 2-year-long investigation into the kidnapping. And eventually, after lots of details of, like, finding clues and whatever, they eventually found a guy. September 1934, they found and apprehended Bruno Richard Hauptmann at his home in the Bronx. Now, Frank.
What?
Nothing good comes out of the Bronx.
You're from the Bronx. Yeah, nothing good except Frank comes out of the Bronx.
And the Matranga family and the rest of my family.
So, and I don't mean to...
Dion DiMucci.
Oh, okay. I don't know who that is, but I'll take your word.
The Wanderer, Run Around Sue?
No.
The singer?
Yeah, Wenny, Weedy, Witchy, whatever he says.
Okay. But Frank, I don't mean to be that guy and be like, oh, you're from the Bronx. Do you know where this place is? But do you happen to know where 222nd Street is in the Bronx?
So that sounds like, if I had to guess, that sounds like the parts of the Bronx that I'm not from, like the South Bronx, where it's more numbered, because I'm from the East Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
So I would guess it's parts that are closer to Manhattan.
Is it more like Yankee Stadium?
Is that, yeah, is it?
I don't know about the Yankee Stadium. It's by Walgreens. I have it in the show notes, but it's by, I don't know if you know where the Northeast Bronx YMCA is or Edenwald.
Well, what street did you say?
Wait, did you say Northeast Bronx?
222nd.
222nd. I'm not as familiar. It's still a ways away, but I think you guys know my brother went to Manhattan College, which is in Brooklyn. Strangely enough, it's on 240th Street. So you got a couple blocks, but I probably don't have a good idea though.
So okay, Frank is actually northwest of you.
Yeah, this is actually not too far from where I live.
Oh
yeah, like it says 3 miles.
Yeah, which is like 30 minutes, but
90
like,
minutes. Yeah,
yeah.
So you committed the crime, is what you're saying, Frank?
It's actually north of me. I literally could not have been more wrong. It is north of me.
Good geography.
Wow. That's where he was apprehended. But and there was a whole trial, I think, in the Bronx about, like, you know, faking the whole ransom notes. Like, that was in and of itself a crime. But the murder trial actually took place at the Hunterdon County Courthouse, which just so happens to be directly across from the Union Hotel.
Okay.
Yeah. And the murder trial went on for a couple years, and eventually it ended with Bruno Hauptmann being sentenced to death on the charges of first-degree murder.
Sounds about
right.
And
he was electrocuted in 1936. Now, you guys might be thinking, okay, this is a nice history lesson, but why am I telling you all this? So basically, Flemington, New Jersey, there's not much going on. But during this trial for the year and a half, 2 years that it went on, the hotel was packed. Like, of the 52 rooms, they were filled with world-renowned journalists and many jurors for the case. And it made it a very popular location for many people. So imagine the middle of nowhere and all of a sudden the quote trial of the century is occurring. Like, that's a big deal. So a lot of people come in and go in.
Why was it the trial of the century? Just because Charles Lindbergh, the dad, was he was the American celebrity at the time, right? Yeah. He was like the biggest. Like this, yeah. This was like a national tragedy that the entire country.
This was Elvis before Elvis. Like where everyone just
Elvis in the sky.
Yeah. So a very famous person, their child was kidnapped and murdered. So not only is it like a terrible crime to begin with, but it's a very famous person. Yeah. So a lot of it, you know, and because it was such a long investigation, it culminated into this big trial where everyone wanted to know, because like obviously they found the body, but you keep checking the newspapers or whatever medium you had for getting the news, and seeing, did they find the guy that got him? Like, this was a whole long process, so it really built up momentum. So the context basically is that, you know, so this was a very big deal. So a lot of people coming in and out. Now, the context isn't necessarily related to or explain why the story that I have to come kind of, you know, why it's happening. But instead, it just provides more of like a historical context as to, you know, what happened here and why this is an important location. So do you guys have any questions, comments on the Lindbergh trial, anything you want to add?
I do remember that what the theory got that was getting thrown around, I don't know when, but it was that Charles Lindbergh actually killed his son, I think.
I think that is a theory. Yeah, I just think it's weird that I have no idea this is true, but who like just chooses a random location like Martha's Vineyard? I bet, and I have no, this is no facts right here. Zero facts.
Perfect.
Imagine just like, oh, we have to pay off this debt. And, oh, I guess we'll go to Martha's Vineyard and then have all this money on me. That's like a vacation for them. They go there, can't do anything, stay a couple nights. I know it's nice there. But then come back and like, I mean, if the theory is that they killed them, they're already monsters. So get a free vacation out of it too.
True.
Yeah, there are theories floating around that perhaps Bruno Hauptmann did not actually kill the Lindbergh baby, because I believe up until his electrocution, he swore that he did not do it.
Frank, you look like you have something to say.
What's his name? Bruno what?
Bruno Mars. Richard Hauptmann.
So Hauptmann, he was an immigrant, right? Or, mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was a German immigrant, I believe.
German immigrant. Worst kind, as we know from my last episode. Such a backward, superstitious people. Anyway, I'm curious where you're going with this. Yeah,
don't worry,
I'm saying that. I'm not editing that out. I'm gonna edit so it sounds like Ryan saying that now.
Perfect.
I'm curious where you're going with this, Aaron. Like, whether you, because I've never heard spooky stuff about this story, so I'm curious to hear what like paranormal aspects about this. Because I've always heard very like conspiracy theory stuff about the Charles Lindbergh, stuff that he was into. So yeah, I'm just curious. Yeah,
are like, you saying for so, with definite fact that Charles Lindbergh sacrificed his baby
for attention?
No, there's reasons. Didn't he also
believe in eugenics?
Yes, he was a Nazi.
It is. Yeah.
No, okay, there we might. I think we're getting ahead of ourselves. Go ahead, Aaron. Tell your story. Okay.
Well, to be honest, I really didn't have like a connection into like why this is the case with like the spooky happenings. But I kind of just wanted to provide that you know, there was a murder trial that lasted for years. So many people coming and going out of this hotel. A lot of mental energy, emotions running pretty high. A child has died. So, you know, there's that. There's a man electrocuted, potentially wrongfully. We don't know. I'm going to go with the facts and say that he probably did it, but there's still the theory that,
fair enough,
you know, Charles Lindbergh did it, but something somewhere, there's a lot of emotion and energy coming from this area. So, I want to give you guys some interesting, spooky stories about when the hotel became a restaurant. So, this is like decades later.
Let's go.
Yep. So similar to Frank's first episode, we've got a restaurant and the former manager talks about some stories. And I actually want to first shout out a website. It's called weirdnj.com. It pretty much has every story about cryptids, ghosts, spooky happenings at the website. And you can read about it. There's a lot of merch. And I highly recommend there's some audio clips and stuff too. Nick and I had listened to a story called The Pig Lady.
Oh my God.
You sent me a link to that.
Yes, I did. So it was very interesting, and I'd recommend if you, yeah.
Can we play? You know what? I'm gonna play a clip of that right now.
And this is the story of the preacher, the choir singer, and the pig woman.
Okay.
Okay. So. wait, are you actually?
Yeah, okay. Why not?
All right.
The listeners just heard it, so we didn't, but they did.
Okay. Okay. But I'd highly recommend if you're into cryptids or ghost stories or whatever, and you have any connections to New Jersey, feel free to check it out. We'll include it in the show notes, but I just wanted to shout it out because that's where I got most of the information of these spooky happenings.
And first off, if you are associated with New Jersey, we're sorry.
So sorry. Our condolences.
Yeah. Anyway, one of the first set of stories is from a former manager, and they asked Weird New Jersey to remain anonymous. So, but they have shared many weird stories about the Union Hotel restaurant. So, the first story is about a bouncer. So it was after closing. The bouncer was locking up for the night and was headed back to the bar to share a drink with the staff. Which, Nick, having worked at a bar, is that kind of customary?
Yeah. The doorman finish up what they got to do, get everyone out of the building. They hang out for a little bit, have a drink or not, and then they'll hang out for however long, and they'll leave while the rest of us just clean up and get ready for the next day.
All right. So, you know, a very typical night, but this particular night, so they closed the doors, the bouncer closes the doors and was headed back to the bar, and all of a sudden, the recently locked doors flew wide open and a cold wind swept by him. So now this is already kind of weird, but you know, could be the wind, could be, you know, whatever.
The mold.
So the bouncer doesn't think much of it and walks back out to close the doors and sees a disembodied pair of children's black patent leather shoes walking up the main stairway.
Oh.
Just
okay.
Shoes?
Yeah. Just shoes.
Is it just one pair or multiple pairs?
Just one pair. And after seeing this, he reasonably freaked out and ran across the street. He then called the staff from across the street and told everyone to get out. Like, and warned them that this thing was coming. Now, Nick, again, you work at a bar. I'm not sure about the bouncer that works there, but generally, bouncers are pretty tough people, correct?
Oh, yeah, we have, like, 4 or 5 on in a night. I wouldn't want to meet any one of them in a back alley and they were angry with me.
All right. So it would really take a lot to scare someone like that, correct?
I would say so.
So I think it's just interesting that, you know, generally if you're a bouncer, you see a lot of stuff, you deal with a lot of, you know, rowdy people.
You deal with the riffraff.
But to be freaked out so badly that you run across the street and don't even, like, personally warn everyone, you just, like, run and then tell them, that's pretty bad. And so there was another time where a waitress was bringing the register drawer upstairs to the office, you know, after a day's close. And when she got to the top, she heard an unearthly voice humming a lullaby. This freaked her out as well. And similar reaction, she drops the register drawer full of money, ran out of the building, and was said to never return.
Like,
I mean, if this is the manager telling the story, so.
Yeah, so like.
They just quit on the spot.
Pretty much, like, they just never came back to work. So, wow. That's an interesting one, too. So we're kind of building a theme, children's shoes, a lullaby hum.
Yeah.
So we're starting to think, you know, maybe it's a child ghost.
You know, was the lullaby one to buckle my shoe?
I don't think it was, but I'd have to probably ask this freaked out waitress, be like, hey, remember this thing that traumatized you? Was it 1, 2? and then I get laughed at and probably a restraining order filed.
By the ghost?
I mean, maybe it's the waitress at the White Dot.
True.
Wait a minute, I'm sorry, to go back to the kids' shoes, did it describe, like, were they Nike kicks or anything, or
Jordan? They just said black patent leather shoes, so
okay.
It's possible they had a buckle on them. But gotcha. I am unsure at this time. So another story from the manager herself. She had some experiences. One time at 3 a.m you know, the witching hour. She was alone in the building doing the books in her office, and she felt another presence with her in the room, which is pretty odd, pretty ominous. It makes you kind of scared when you're alone. So she said, and I quote, I could feel the pressure of it right up against me, pushing on my chest. It was making it hard for me to breathe. I didn't feel threatened. I simply asked it to move away and leave me alone, and then it was gone.
Oh.
Yeah. So, luckily for the manager, she kept her composure and, you know, just asked politely and the spirit let her go. But we've heard stories where, you know, people aren't quite so lucky or get a very aggressive spirit. But that kind of contradicts the children aspect, unless, you know, spirit world children are just like swole. And then I've got one more story, and then we can kind of just go into a discussion about what you guys think, who you think the ghost might be, so on and so forth. But a former employee actually tells their story of their experience with the paranormal at this restaurant. So at about midnight, the dining room was closed and empty for well over 2 hours. And then the waiter came into the bar area and asked, whose kid is playing in the dining room? So, already a red flag. And, you know, his coworkers were like, you know, it's probably nothing. You probably were just seeing things like, you know, it's closed and empty. And the waiter was like, no, I definitely saw a girl about 8 to 10 years old running back and forth in the dining room. And he goes on to explain, you know, she's got long dark hair and was wearing a fancy dress. And one of the, you know, at the bar area, one of the regulars overheard him and laughed and told him, "You've just seen the ghost."
The ghost?
So obviously, the ghost. The ghost.
Oh.
So for a regular to say that, you know, probably not just people making it up. It's more likely, you know, a typical occurrence, or at least it was a typical occurrence. So, yeah, unfortunately, there's not many more stories about this particular location, but I thought it was pretty interesting, all these different stories. So I wanted to kind of step back and try and figure out what is causing all this. Like, we know that most of the stories involve a little child, probably a girl, 8 to 10 years old. So I want to know, what do you guys think about all this?
Well, let's open it up to Ryan, as he is the biggest, and by biggest, I mean probably the only skeptic among the four of us here.
Well, I mean,
I am.
Is that still true, Ryan? What? Give us a little background. What, you know? Do you even believe in ghosts? What do you? You know, be honest. We're not going to judge you.
I'm still pretty skeptical of most things. I think the weirdest thing that ever happened, and Aaron was there when it happened, was there was these cards with different minerals, and someone's like, "Name a mineral," and that'll be like your one, and I forget what I said. I was pretty sure I said emerald because that was the only one I knew, and that was the top card. That was pretty weird. No, sorry. It was aquamarine. It was aquamarine because that's my birthstone.
And then that was doubly top card. Okay.
And that was so weird. But yeah, that's pretty unlikely. But yeah, I'm pretty skeptical of most things. I might have done a little bit of typing between Aaron's talks. And the little girl thing does seem a little weird, just to poke holes in a couple people's theories already. The liver baby was a boy, so maybe don't go down.
Ryan's keeping this on track.
Do not think it was the Lindbergh baby. It was too far away. It wasn't near the hotel.
Yeah. What is the distance between the house and the hotel restaurant here?
Because the
trial was close, but not necessarily the house, right?
About 15 miles, roughly.
Well, that's
going to give you an exact.
Well, the thing is, if I was a ghost, I kind of want to see my trial.
Well, if you're a baby, though, you don't know.
Yeah,
you're a ghost. You know everything.
The same? Does aging work the same as a ghost?
I'm not ageist, so.
So. Just for context to remind you guys, the Lindbergh baby, as Ryan said, is a boy and was about 10 months old at the time of its death. So, yeah, this, I would say, none of us would really advocate was the Lindbergh baby, unless some really weird stuff happens in the afterlife.
you age really quick and you can just change genders when you feel.
Well, wine, okay. Yes, no, I don't think. Like, no, there's no connection. It just so happens that crazy story happens nearby. But in theory, if you're a ghost, right? Like, in some understandings of, like, the afterlife, like the Catholic understanding of the afterlife, you can kind of, you'd be able to represent yourself however you want if you come back as a ghost for whatever reason. So, like, you know.
I guess, but I don't think it's Charles Lindbergh's baby.
No. What are you saying? Like ghosts?
No, that's Bruno Hauptmann. It's Bruno Hauptmann. 10-year-old girl.
Oh yeah, I forgot. He's dead too. I forgot about
that. And he died
after
nearby.
The trial. After the trial, though.
And this also took place after the trial.
Ah, I thought it was during.
Well, it's not him either. That'd be weird.
We should do an episode on that story because Charles Lindbergh had Nazi leanings and was into eugenics. And
the Nazis did love their occultism.
Might have offered his baby as like an genetic experiment and went wrong, and they wanted to cover it up.
Oh, good.
And the baby wasn't the baby missing? Like I know you were trying to avoid this, but wasn't the baby missing like organs that would have shown that there were like birth defects? Anyway, that's a story for another time. But
right, let's circle back, Ryan. What are we thinking?
So we got three scenarios. We have the shoes.
Yep.
We have the girl playing, and I'm missing one in between. What was the one in between?
The lullaby. The waitress hearing lullaby. The lullaby dropping.
Those are only three reported ones.
Oh, there's the waitress who left.
That was with the lullaby.
No, that was the lullaby. That was lullaby. The other one.
There
was
one
the,
with
the,
a
hey,
weird
a pressure
presence.
On my chest.
Yeah, that's the man.
Yeah.
That one was just me.
No. I bet that one kind of sounded like to me like, hey, there was this guy hitting on me in the bar, and I told him to leave, and he left. But like, I could have probably made a police report about it, but I'm just gonna say it was a ghost.
What? At 3 a.m. alone in a locked building with a Ouija board?
It sounded like with a Ouija board. That would change
in the money
up.
Pit, Ryan?
But like, but she was like, I felt a presence. I'm like, stop. And then they like did. I'm like, okay.
That's fair.
That one's a little far-fetched though. I think the shoes one, someone could have lost their shoes. I mean, that is weird though. I mean, I know Nick said the big guys who are bouncers aren't really afraid of much. If you see some lost clothing, I mean, like, I know guys are afraid of like insects sometimes. Well, and it
if
might there, be
I'll say at least at work here, if there's any leftover, if someone leaves a jacket or something,
lost and
yeah,
found it.
Either the bouncers or if we're closed and people are out and we find something maybe left in the bathroom or something on a chair as we're cleaning up, whoever's there will grab it and put it in a lost and found area. And the bouncers do that as well.
That makes sense. Yeah, I mean, like,
so it's totally
being skeptical.
Normal.
Being skeptical, I really don't have any like good explanations for any of this. This is all very interesting, very spooky stuff.
Perfect, we got him. End of story.
The one thing we'll always say is the except for the little girl one, this is one person back in old times where, hey, we don't even know that we have to, I don't know.
Well, no, this was
like, we don't we
when was it a restaurant?
This
the 50s?
At
least, have planes.
It was between the 1950s and 2008. So,
but still,
I don't...
there's still a lot of knowledge missing, and like making sure something's true. Like, I don't know. Also, detective work, was there DNA back then?
Yeah, I mean,
but there was DNA.
In the 50s, that's when Watson and Crick did like the DNA.
I don't
structure.
Think there was DNA forensics until like the 80s.
Okay, well, it also doesn't. I don't know if it says when these stories actually occurred. I don't believe. But I can look that up for you guys.
I mean, if a manager's relaying these stories when she worked there and then posting it on the internet, it's probably at least the 90s till 2008 would be my guess.
True.
Oh, well, that would change a lot.
Because remember, this is
Ryan, your point.
This is the manager relaying the stories and posting it on here. So she probably, it's probably like 80s at the most.
Yeah, I would say it's probably more recent times, although the article that I read did not say when this had actually occurred. So.
But Ryan's point still stands where it's not like laboratory conditions, something was observed and recorded, right? It is just people's anecdotes saying, mm-hmm. I saw this, or I know someone who saw that. So like, you know, as spooky as these things are, like, yeah, you have to... To even start talking about what is it, you have to accept like that the person is telling the truth about what they even think they saw. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing stopping people from going on. You know, like for my story, there's nothing stopping people from like making up the story and saying I saw this, I saw that. But you know, you can't get very far if you just refuse to believe what people report. So it's like, but yeah, I mean, it's not like we have videos or actually, I don't know. Have you? Aaron, have you heard of any sort of thing
not.
Like videos or EVPs, Nick's favorite?
I don't think Adam. That there are really any. I know that there are ghost tours that go through the historic district of Flemington. So I believe they do. I don't know if they have looked in, like have actually gone in the hotel and done any like EVPs or anything like that. But I do know that people do tour it frequently, or at least they did before renovations and such. So
yeah, interesting.
I don't have anything as of right now, but there probably exists somebody. But I just want to circle back and remind you guys of the fact that I mentioned the second and third floors of the restaurant were empty. Like, not being touched. Like,
that's weird, right?
Yeah.
Like, well, were they maintained? I mean, how many? Just...
Not really, to my knowledge. It was just kind of left there. Like, they have pictures in the link. I think I'll include it in the show notes, but I'm pretty sure the rooms look very dated and kind of
that's creepy, just like a creepy setting
at work too. Like, everything's on the first floor, like the bars and the restaurant. The second floor and third floor are like storage areas and like for other things, and we don't go up there too often. Sometimes we do, but if going up there at night, it's super creepy, and like the only people that can get up there are us, and typically it's only usually the owner or the barbacks.
Mm-hmm.
So if I went up there and saw someone up there, and it wasn't anyone I recognized, I'd freak out. Or oh even God, if I I'm heard anything, the because there is no one ever up there, and it's always locked. Like, there's a code for the doors to get up, to get into the floors.
Or yeah, you need so a key. I sent you guys the link to the weird New Jersey.
Creepy pictures article? Of the second and third floors. Oh my God.
Yeah. It's like, it looks like, oh, it's been left that way since the 50s. You know?
I'll put these in the show notes, but yeah, especially at night. So,
that's like
that.
A bar.
Yeah, that's
true. Like, that's most likely on the first floor where they're actually like maintaining stuff and all that. But then you get to the second, third floors and it's just like nothing's been updated in 50 years and nobody's cleaned it probably.
Or the waste of real estate.
Even Nick said that they usually use it for storage. These second floors don't look like storage floors.
Yeah, they look as though they were the hotel rooms from, you know, whenever it transitioned, I think, in the 50s. But
well,
so do you, so there's no reason that we know of that they kept these floors empty?
Well, pretty much, why would you need more than one floor for a restaurant, first of all, in a town where not much goes on, except for the Lindbergh baby trial? Like, that was the only thing to have happened.
They need another baby.
Other than my grandpa being born. That's the first most important. The second most important is the Lindbergh baby trial.
And third most important is us visiting this place.
True. I don't know if you can visit it as of right now. I'd have to look at the status of the renovation and stuff.
Oh, we can.
Oh, okay. My bad. We'll sneak make up our to way a construction in. Site.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was most likely just not used because it didn't need to be used.
Yeah.
Like, there is no need for a hotel there. Like, there's simply not enough people to warrant it. And like the one owner had mentioned, they were hemorrhaging money for about 9 years. So it wasn't really profitable building. So even if they had a hotel, you know, to pay maids and stuff, it probably wouldn't have been worth it.
I wonder if there would have been, if it like stayed open as a hotel somehow, if there would have been experiences people had while staying like in the rooms up there.
I'd have to imagine.
Because it seems like all the experiences that the manager described, it was all on the first floor. Like, it all happened in the restaurant. It didn't really happen on the other floors, right?
The bouncer story was the shoes were walking up the main stairway.
Oh, okay.
And then the second story with the waitress, she was walking up the stairs to go bring the register drawer to the office.
So the office is on the second floor.
That's my guess. They didn't explicitly say that, but
I didn't know if they like for some reason did stuff in the basement and then brought it up.
I don't think so. And the manager's experience, it did not specify whether her office was on the first or second floor.
Gotcha.
But obviously the last story where it was the dining area, but that's on the first floor.
Well, so, and also with that one, like Ryan said, one of the regulars did say, like, oh, you saw the ghost, you know? So it's like someone else it's like it's known, and it's always, you know, when there's corroboration from another person, like unprompted, and I just like go over, oh yeah, I saw this girl. I mean, the guy could have been like pulling a joke on him, you know, just be like, oh yeah, you saw the ghost. And he'd be like, what?
Yeah.
This sounds very similar to my first story, a haunted restaurant that before being a restaurant was a hotel slash just place where people lived. It makes you wonder, like, what is it about these sorts of places that they like always have hauntings or just weird stuff happen?
It's always hotels. It is always hotels.
It's always hotels. It's always, you know, schools or restaurants, train stations, things like that. I think, you know, in a small town like this, I'm sure there's dozens of more encounters and stories from the workers there and the owners there and the patrons there that, you know, don't make their way to anywhere, to a website. You know what I mean? So yeah. And like, that's kind of hinted at.
Even finding this information, like the only real source was this weird NJ, which, you know, granted they did a very good job at covering the story, but it only had about 4 stories and that was it. Like there weren't really any other sources of like, this is also another story. Like, you know, in past episodes we've had multiple different sources that corroborate things or like add on stories or add details or whatever, but this isn't the case for this one. And I don't know, Flemington's not a huge place. Like it's still a city in the sense that there's stuff to do, but generally there's not a lot of people that A, have heard of Flemington, or B, that really like frequent Flemington. So
yeah, that's fair. So I think we have to make do with what stories we have, but the fact that even that many stories made it to the public and to you indicates that there's obviously something going on there. People see something, and it's just weird that similar to my story, it's like little girl ghosts, right? Like, I feel like you don't hear, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm not thinking of them, but I don't know, when you hear ghost stories, I feel like it's more often that you hear stories of kids or young people than like the ghost of the old man or the old woman. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe I'm biased or like stuff.
Does that fall in the same category as ghosts? Is that, you know, is that like different? Mm. I don't know. There's something about kids, I feel like.
Well, usually, so the traditional idea of ghosts, you know, they have unfinished business, or, you know, maybe they were wrongfully killed or wrongfully died or whatever. And so their soul and spirit lingers. So generally when you get old in age, you don't typically die from a wrongful death. It's more so like, yeah, you just kind of died, you know?
Yeah, whereas no reason children, to stay behind. You're ready to move on.
Yeah, or like, you know, you've lived a full life and, you know, like you said, you're ready to move on. But with children, you know, their life was tragically cut short for one reason or another. And so maybe, you know, there's more of a reason to stick around. So
that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, given all the different things that have to be true for us to even, you know, consider the difference here. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I'm sure Ryan's like, yeah, shit. Yeah.
Hey, Ryan's okay. What do you think, Ryan, about everything we've been saying?
I mean, like, it makes sense that a ghost that dies at a young, someone who dies at a young age, I think is way more likely, I guess, to become a ghost, because the best measurement for me, this is going to be a really weird measurement. In a news story, if a child dies, we have lost an angel. If a 21-year-old dies, a 21-year-old died. Tragic death. 40-year-old, they died. 60 above. They hit the bucket. At that point, it's okay. You know what? You lived enough life. Still could be tragic,
But I think just life experience, the less you get, the more you'd want to stick around, I guess.
Yeah, that's, and I guess even to add on to that, the death of someone's life cut short just generates more like attention than a 99-year-old passing away, right? So yeah, maybe there's something to it. Both the person who's dead might have more to stick around for if they're young, and also it causes more of a stir in the minds of people when it's something young or dramatic, or young and dramatic. So yeah, I mean, yeah, if ghosts are real, then yeah, you know what we should do? We should like do a little study. Nick, you could use your data science skills and get some sorts of ghost stories and try to like figure out the age of the ghost or general age and see like if they're like trans.
Based
like,
on
are most ghost stories about young ghosts or old?
The age of a ghost. Now that.
No, yeah, just right? See if there's any trends.
Yeah, just like, see like it's like know? If it skews, I don't know. I just don't know the words, like the vocab here, but like see if the general, like what the average age of a ghost is. There we go.
Average
like,
age of a ghost.
General,
so
not that you know.
Find stories that give the age of a ghost.
They would have to know the who is the ghost.
Yeah, you'd have to like.
It's the ghost of.
Or we have
no,
to.
Or you just have to have ghost stories and read them and like with AI to tell like if adjectives like young or like old.
That's
years,
natural
you know
language
I mean?
Processing. You don't need AI for that.
You just. Yeah, Nick, you just ALU. Did that. You could do this project. Anyway, we'll get back
yeah,
to that.
Come on, get on geez. It, Nick.
Data graph and charts in the show notes, courtesy of Nick. Right? Check right now for him. I'm kidding.
So yeah, one thing that still bugs me is I don't know who this ghost is. Like, what do you guys think? Do you think it's a patron of the hotel when it was one? Do you think it has to do with the Lindbergh baby trial? Do you think it's just some random manifestation of the emotions and energy around? What do you guys think?
I would say it's probably not all the same. I think that in places that are haunted, there's probably more than one thing going on. I think the fact that you said one of the workers or patrons said, oh, you saw the ghost, makes me think that maybe there's one particular, I'm going to say entity is the most general term, that maybe is like, I don't know, most prominent there. But I would doubt that like every odd occurrence that happens at the hotel would be from the same source, right? Because if you have a place that many, many people go through, I think it's just more likely there are multiple, maybe people who have passed away there or people who really loved that place as a vacation place or a hotel and then passed on and they're sticking around. So I would hesitate to say that, you know, like, the ghosts and all the occurrences are caused by one, the child who died in the backyard, stuff like that. So
yeah,
I guess my answer is,
fair.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's a bit of head scratcher, as our friend says.
As our buddy Jim Harold, give a shout out to, not that he needs a shout out, he's like the
yeah, he needs pod
father. I hate that word.
But pod
Jim Harold, if you're listening.
Father?
I know pod father. It's a thing. I didn't come up. It sounds so cringy, but he's like the paranormal pod father.
Yeah. So Jim Harold, if you're listening, feel free to shout us out Wednesday at 9 p.m.
Oh, I'm sure he's one of our 11 Spotify listeners.
Oh, probably.
Frank, you've been on his show.
That's true. That's I did true. Submit a story and I did speak and I did, he did interview me for, I mean, that's this whole show, but that's true. Great show. The Campfire. Listen to it and then listen to us and I don't know, give us 5 stars or something, whatever.
So Nick and Ryan, what do you guys think?
I think it's
Nick, I mean, I haven't heard from you.
I mean, again, I think little girl ghost, the lullaby that imply that could have been, you know, you said unearthly, but a little girl could also be singing a lullaby. The shoes going up the stairs. You know. These, like, you said what? Like, black leather shoes?
Yeah.
I mean, those could be a little girl shoes too. I'm leaning more towards it. Maybe it is just like a little girl and it's just the one thing. And maybe she died in the hotel at some point. We'd have to, I mean, we could see if there are any documented deaths that happened in the hotel.
Yeah, that's a good point. I can look into that, and if I find it...
If there is a little girl that died in a hotel between whenever it was a hotel,
yeah,
I mean, that's pretty good for me.
All right. So we got Frank is on the... not really sure what it is, but there's probably something there. We got Nick, who thinks there's probably one thing there, but not quite sure who. And now Ryan. Are you going to tell me that there's nothing there?
I'll give you two options.
One, okay.
The restaurant was serving kids via baby back ribs. And they were haunting the place.
Oh my God.
I mean, I need to see that menu. I got to make sure baby back ribs are not there. They could have been doing that in front of everybody.
Okay.
Or there could be another option where... that sometimes when it's late at night or you're drinking enough beer or you're tired and it's dark, sometimes you see something, sometimes you hear something, and sometimes you imagine something's there that it's not. Even one time this happened to me where, like, you know, I get sleep paralysis.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like, I love this story, Ryan.
Yeah.
I'll make a quick version. We can always do a different, longer version later. But I had sleep paralysis one time, and it was really scary. And I could swear something was behind me. I didn't see a shadow. I didn't see a figure. But when I turned around, I could have swore that every sense other than sight told me something was there. And I turned around. Nothing was there.
You say it was like a cat or something, like a black cat?
I thought it was a cat, and there's like a, I think there's a specific thing that's like a cat. I didn't read enough on it, but yeah, sometimes it's just your mind playing tricks on you. The brain had thousands of years to become what it is, but hey, it ain't
perfect. I will say, being the person that has worked at a restaurant, specifically also late at night, the lights are on the whole time while we're cleaning up until we're almost essentially all done. And the managers will do like a walkthrough and close everything. And additionally, we are not allowed to, like, after we're done with the cleaning and everything, we can sit down and, you know, have a few drinks with each other. But that doesn't happen until, at least for us, you know, 2:30 a.m. So like we're still working up until that point. So we're awake the whole time because we have to get all the cleaning done.
Yeah, of course.
So it's like I'm not tired at least.
I mean, the thing I add on to differences between your situation and theirs is I think most of these were, except for the one where the, like, oh, you saw the ghost. The other situations were mostly one person. So one person could be pretty tired and be like, just try and burn the midnight oil, finish the job, and then go to bed. So
true.
Yeah, that's the one counterpoint I'll give to you.
I think my closing statement would be, Nick, you work in a similar scenario. So I wonder, let's say you're place of work was haunted, would you see anything? And what I mean by that is, do only certain kinds of people see these things? If you're in a haunted location, do you have to be a person that's sensitive to it to see this stuff? Like, I feel like I'm the first sort of person that will never see anything weird, even though I kind of would want to. Like Sarah, she's probably more I feel like she's a little more
she
susceptible
probably has
to it.
And just hasn't told
you know
me.
Like true, all right. She's probably seen ghosts. So, like, I wonder if the four of us here, are there some of us that are, for, you know, subconsciously, like, we're open to seeing weird things, and some of us are just closed off to it no matter what? Like, if we were in a scenario where there was a ghost, would some of us see it and some of us not? looking in the same direction in the same place.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because it makes you wonder, right? If you have a haunted restaurant and bar and there's a ghost hanging around, why doesn't everyone see it? Is it because the ghost isn't there all the time, or is it because not every kind of person is open to it? And then if that's the case, where not every kind of person is open to it, that makes it even harder to tell what's real and what's not, right? Because then it just opens a can of worms saying, like, you can see it and I can't. That means you're making it up, mm-hmm. or it's in your head, mm-hmm. or something wrong with you. So, long story short, I want to see a ghost. That's all.
Yeah, me too. But like a nice ghost, like Casper.
That's true.
Like, but, yeah. I don't want to be encountering the ghost where it's like pushing up against my chest and I have to beg it for air. Like,
oh, Aaron, you would, don't lie, you would love that.
Yeah, you're like, wait.
Okay.
go ahead.
You got me.
Ghosts out there, I'm sure at least three of our listeners on Spotify are ghosts because they don't finish the whole episode. You hear Aaron press up all on them.
All right. And with that.
All right. Yeah, we should probably wrap it up here. So, yeah, there's a lot of different stories. We got multiple different perspectives of this potential one ghost, multiple spirits. Who knows? Maybe it's nothing. But this is Wednesday at 9 p.m. And if you're interested, read on about the Union Hotel.
That's all for tonight. Check out the show notes and all references used via the link in the description. We hope you enjoyed the show. We'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m.
Sixty-eight, sixty-five, sixty-six, sixty-five, sixty-six, 89.